Oh, it's also heartfelt here on the radio. You know, the microphone never lies. The camera, remember, anybody old enough in the audience to remember when people used to say, the camera never lies? Talk about lost innocence. All right, so, ladies and gentlemen, we've not heard any more apologies in the ensuing week. Just keeping track here, since Tony Snow apologized a week ago for spreading what turned out to be the canard of the Clinton people trashing the White House before they left. Just to make clear who might owe apologies, here's what Britt Hume said on January 25th of this year. Quote, by the way, the reported vandalism in those White House offices now includes power and phone cords cut, trash dumped on floors, desk drawers emptied onto floors, pornographic pictures left in computer printers, scatological messages left on voicemail, and cabinets and drawers glued shut. And the Washington Times reports, continued Britt Hume, that the presidential 747 was stripped bare, the plane's porcelain, china, and silverware, and salt and pepper shakers, blankets and pillowcases. Nearly all items bearing the presidential seal were taken by Clinton staffers who went along for the ride. The Washington Times quoted a military steward as saying even a supply of toothpaste was stolen from a compartment under a sink. Unquote, not true. General Services Administration last week, as you know, if you were listening, reported none of this happened. The apologies. Where are they? Bill O'Reilly on the Fox News Channel. I mean, the price tag right now is about $200,000, so that's a felony right there, unquote. Oliver North, quote, there's an awful lot about this whole administration that never looked right to many of us. And, of course, their closing act in this whole thing, which was basically trashing the White House, we should expect from white trash what they did at the White House, unquote, Oliver North. Did I miss Oliver North's apology? Because I would have hated to. Because I like to hear the second act in America. Just to contradict Faulkner. It was Faulkner, wasn't it? Speaking of which, Monica Lewinsky wants prosecutors to return the dress. The dark navy high-necked number from The Gap was not among the items returned to Lewinsky after the independent counsel's office wrapped up its probe, according to her spokeswoman. She's still got a spokeswoman. Out of the headlines for a year and a half, she still lives in the hope. It is her lawyer's position she's entitled to have back all of her possessions, said her spokeswoman, Judy, with an I, Nadler. She hastened to add that Lewinsky has no interest in selling the dress, even though collectibles experts say, you want to guess what the estimate is of what it could fetch? $500,000. They think there's some idiot out there that would pay idiot. What am I talking about? He'll turn around and sell it for $2 million in 2 years. We'll pay $500,000 for Monica Lewinsky's dress. A spokesman for independent counsel Robert Ray, who completed Ken Starr's investigation, says the question of the dress will be addressed, quote, in due time, unquote. All deliberate speed, babe. She said in 1999 to Barbara Walters, about whom more later on this broadcast, that if she ever got the dress back, quote, I'd burn it. $500,000. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen, the country we live in these days. Says one collecting expert who used to own the dress that Marilyn Monroe wore when she sang Happy Birthday to President Kennedy. That dress sold for $1.26 million a couple years ago. He says, quote, when you think of the Monica scandal, you think of that dress. I can see our children's children knowing about that dress. It's one of those items that can transcend time. He sold a presidential humidor for $15,000, this collectibles expert. So maybe he knows what he's talking about, and maybe these people aren't idiots. And maybe it's time to save up for a bid. Hello, welcome to the show. Your children's children. Children, this is the dress that...
You can feel the horses under the hood. They thick and thin. The bull is out of the wood. Is she the smoothest ride, yeah? You'll never think. Is she the Delta slide of automobiles? the back seat. I hear you, yeah, with your main squeeze. They play a triple road, accordion fills in the USS Zydeco's mobile. USS Zydeco's mobile.
Oh, world. short, but I'm healthy, yeah. I'm high, but I'm grounded. I'm sane, but I'm overwhelmed. I'm lost, but I'm hopeful, baby. And what it all comes down to is that everything's gonna be fine, fine, fine. 'Cause I've got one hand in my pocket and the other one is giving a high five. I feel drunk, but I'm sober.
Yeah, everything's fine, 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 especially here in the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of Le Show, the special Memorial Day edition. Ladies and gentlemen, you can imagine, you can just imagine how very special it actually is. But you don't have to imagine that. It's here for you to listen to now. You can imagine it later when you're trying to remember it. Okay, it is Memorial Day. Pearl Harbor is cleaning up at the box office. The Greatest Generation, as we pointed out last week, is, and as Frank Rich in the New York Times followed up yesterday by saying the exact same word, like, was he listening or what? It's now become a brand. But not all is respect for that generation. Not yet. The Greatest Generation book by Brokaw omitted reference to the U.S. submarine war against Japan, which may well have been the most remarkable feat of arms that has eluded headline attention. What's ironic is that Brokaw's network, NBC, is doing its part to make sure that nobody ever does hear about it. The submarine force made up 2% of U.S. Navy personnel, yet it sank almost 45% of Japan's warships and 80% of its merchant fleet. This is no knock on Japan, by the way, because we have listeners over there. Same as Pearl Harbor, you know? This came at substantial cost. 52 U.S. submarines were lost during the war, along with 3,505 sailors. 20% of the submarine force. This comes up because back in the 1950s, NBC used the official boat deck logs to create a relatively long-running series called The Silent Service. A dramatic series based on the exploits of the submarine service during World War II. A couple of years ago, just as Brokaw's book began its run on the bestseller list, retired submarine electrician's mate John Clear started to resurrect the series for a limited audience. He haunted internet auction sites and other possible repositories of old episodes with modest success, and then he began selling homemade copies over the internet. They were of questionable technical quality. I sold a couple of hundred copies, he says. I didn't make any money, that's for sure. One episode I bought off eBay for $100, that sort of stuff. Who was buying? Wrote one customer, the tapes are intended as a birthday gift for my father who served on the USS Bofin during World War II. In other words, a member of the Greatest Generation. Clear, soon after, in April of this year, got a cease and desist letter from NBC demanding he end his project. But, you know, they're lawyers. They do what they're told. Aren't they? Ladies and gentlemen, let's re-examine that that concept of reality, shall we? Let's just take another look at that whole premise. First of all, Survivor. Mark Burnett, the producer of Survivor, as you know, on this broadcast it was pointed out, has already admitted that scenes on Survivor were restaged to get better camera angles. Now, a former contestant on the show testifies in a lawsuit that Burnett suggested to him that he vote a player off the island. Burnett has denied the accusation. Dirk Bean is testifying in a lawsuit filed by Stacy Stillman, a loser in the first Survivor game last summer. Dirk, we all knew him as Dirk, didn't we? Testified he did not feel coerced or manipulated into voting the way he did, but he did say that Burnett, producer of the show, in a conversation on the ninth day of filming, suggested that Dirk form an alliance to vote against Stacy and keep another contestant, Rudy, on the island. Dirk voted against Stacy, and she was eliminated from the game. Dirk said in his deposition that producer Burnett, quote, believed that certain people would make a better TV show than others, and he did what he could to have influence over those people staying on the island, unquote. Reality, baby. It can be tough. Second piece of evidence in that regard, Big Brother is back on the air in Britain. And whereas last summer when the show premiered, the producers insisted their program was a daring social experiment, this time they've dropped the BS. As the five men and five women, average age 27, walked into the revamped Big Brother house. And boy, I can't wait till we get our next episode of Big Brother. A house in the valley in the summertime. Man, that's reality. Publicists for the British show made clear that the theme for 2001 is sex. A source at the television network producing the British version of Big Brother, a reality series, I point out, it's described as, says, quote, the participants have been tipped the wink that they can get intimate with each other. We would like a more crackling sexual energy, a charged atmosphere, unquote. Well, who wouldn't? Oh, I'm on about the TV show. All right. So there's your reality, ladies and gentlemen. Who needs writers when you have producers tipping a wink? Okay, it's Sunday. That means it's time to panic in the news. An antibiotic-resistant bacterium found in salami and other forms of raw sausages can transfer its resistance to humans, endangering those needing antibiotic therapy, according to a new study. If I were sick or pregnant, I wouldn't eat worst anymore, says Franziska Schwartz, a food engineer at Switzerland's prestigious Federal Institute of Technology and the author of the study. A food engineer, ladies and gentlemen. They didn't have those on career day when I was in school. You could be a food engineer and make up new foods for people to enjoy. Schwartz found that animals such as cows, given antibiotics in their feed, could develop genes that are resistant to the antibiotics. Five of those genes could be passed on in raw meat and remain in dried foods such as salami and sausage. The isolated bacteria contain genes resistant to no less than 12 antibiotics, and among them, streptomycin. And streptoursin, too. In the laboratory, Schwartz found that the isolated bacteria could be passed on to gene-resistant bacteria. What? The isolated bacteria could be passed on to gene-resistant bacteria such as Listeria. Foods such as raw cheeses and sausages may be a direct vehicle for antibiotic-resistant bacteria from the farm animal into the mouths of the consumer. Antibiotics prescribed for an ill person who had eaten food containing an antibiotic-resistant gene could be useless. Woo! And if a person carrying resistant genes stayed in a hospital, immune-weakened people like HIV-positive patients could be in danger because antibiotic therapy could not help anymore, says Schwartz. Wow! Don't eat, is the lesson there, I guess. Well, don't eat raw meat and raw cheese. Raw cheese. Who cooks cheese? Well, sometimes you do. Schwartz next plans to study vegetables to see if whether they can also transfer antibiotic-resistant genes, in which case the whole eating thing is over. And something else to prove that everything's going to be fine, fine, fine. Starting in July, if all goes as planned, motorists in Florida applying for or renewing their driver's licenses will get a little something extra, a thin plastic sleeve with a protective strip obscuring their home address. The State Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles has begun the program to protect the privacy of Floridians. Florida's our new California, you know. Everything starts there now. So pay attention to this. The identity card holder is free, but there is a catch in addition to the highway safety logo on the back. That's right, there'll be a corporate logo. How... Did you read this before I... The 5 million of the holders the department will be putting out. It's not yet known which company will take on the project or whether there will be several of them. The Highway Department of Florida has teamed with a California organization, the Identity Theft Education Project, to solicit advertisers for the driver's license holders. The department gets the final say on the company, as well as the design. Certain kinds of companies, tobacco or alcohol, will be disqualified from the competition. So, it could be Nike would be good, but, you know, anybody, really. Anybody out of the tobacco. But, you know, Philip Morris just for the cheese, or for the community service, or any of that stuff that they do. Let's see. We have one hot property, but this is from the Chicago Tribune. So there's hot property more places than one, I guess. Actor-director Robert Redford is selling his three-bedroom penthouse apartment on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan for $15 million. It's in Chicago. This is a newspaper reporting a house sale, a condo sale, an apartment sale, excuse me, in New York. Actor Tom, they have the Tom Arnold listing, the Helen Reddy listing. They're picking up all of the hot property in Chicago. I wonder how they got that idea. All right, ladies and gentlemen, big talk this week about the Bush triumph, and it was. No two ways about it. President Bush announced his primary legislative objective was to pass a tax cut. And yesterday, in unusual Saturday sessions, the Senate and House passed final versions of the tax cut so that President Bush could, as he wanted to, sign it on Memorial Day in tribute to all the dead programs. But not widely reported in all of the discussion of, you know, in the big print, you read about the amount of the tax, the $300 rebate checks that people will be getting. The argument over whether it was a $1.6 or a $1.3 trillion tax cut over 10 years. All the tricky stuff, ladies and gentlemen, is in the fine print, and there's no bigger world headquarters for tricky stuff than a tax bill. And so it is that this bill, soon to be a law, contains a number of obscure provisions that withdraw the tax breaks that are offered For example, a deduction of up to $5,000 for tuition payments disappears in 2005. He might as well be working for Fox. The tax bill acknowledges the problem with the alternative minimum tax. This would kick in to a lot more taxpayers. This is the tax that was meant to prevent rich people from getting away with paying no tax. But as tax rates are reduced, more people become eligible for the alternative minimum tax. So it provides partial relief beginning January the 1st of this year, but it discontinues the relief on December 31st, 2004, just as the number of taxpayers caught by the alternative minimum tax begins to rise rapidly. Analysts describe the maneuvering with the alternative minimum tax as the most glaring example of gimmickry in the package. Negotiators, some charge, deliberately delayed the main impact of this bill until after the 2004 presidential election. In 2005, the number of taxpayers affected will jump from 5 million to 13 million. 13 will get socked with a new higher tax after the next presidential election. Says Senator Charles Grassley, chairman of the Finance Committee, everyone understands it's a problem. He said the tax bill addressed the problem until 2004. Quote, that gives us 3 years to work on what we would call a cliff when the relief drops to nothing and try to solve the problem on a more permanent basis. And also the tax bill expires in 2009, I believe, or 2010, 9 years from now. So it may all come to an end. It may all come crashing to an end, or it may not, or it may just be senators and representatives then will be dared. Who has the guts not to renew it? Finally, ladies and gentlemen, on the subject of taxes, you may have missed this. This was in the Financial Times, not an American newspaper. In it, Paul O'Neill, the U.S. Treasury Secretary in the air quote administration, has laid out a vision, his vision for what's next. Now, this was before the control of the Senate flipped, so you may regard this as basically what we just managed to avoid thanks to Senator Jeffords, or what we are deprived of because of Senator Jeffords, depending on your point of view. But listen to this. This is the Treasury Secretary's outline for the new tax structure. The present tax system is an abomination that requires changes to its very structure, says Paul O'Neill, U.S. Treasury Secretary, formerly head of Alcoa. Not only am I committed to working on this issue, the president is also intrigued about the possibility of fixing this mess. One of the most important moves would be abolition of taxation on corporations. They always tell you corporations pay no taxes, but this guy wants to abolish it. Anyway, corporate income tax, the main form of tax on U.S. businesses, accounts for 10% of federal revenues. Treasury Secretary O'Neill also questions the guarantees the government provides for full public subsidy of senior citizens' health care and retirement programs. Quote, able-bodied adults who have the ability to earn income have an obligation not to pass part of their own responsibility on to a broader population, he said. Abolishing corporate tax would inevitably lead to higher personal income taxes. O'Neill believes such a move would promote economic growth. Current corporate tax levels were too high, he said, as well as their administrative costs. The system would work better if the government collected taxes in a more direct way from the people. Any increase in personal income tax would undoubtedly provoke strong voter opposition, these from the people who just supposedly cut your personal income taxes. But Mr. O'Neill says he absolutely wants to eliminate the corporate income tax. He also wants to do away with capital gains taxes. And as I say, he wants to back away from the government's guarantee to fund Social Security. That's Paul O'Neill, Treasury Secretary, formerly of Alcoa, in a newspaper interview this week, just before the Senate, control of the Senate changed hands. So, if you'd like to help this thing along, why not just send what you think your favorite corporation might be owing in taxes to help them along? because that's not going to be happening for a while.
There's a brand new car in your driveway and a blonde new girl in your bed. You've everything you ever wished for, happy little bubblehead. And you can't fill it up with promises, you can't fill it up with lies, and you can't fill it up with business lunches. Oh, but you can try. Who am I to criticize you? Just a girl that you despise.
This is Le Show from the Edge of America. I'm still the guy that said I was who I was at the beginning. Ladies and gentlemen, if Barbara Walters wants to leave ABC News, Dan Rather would love to see her at CBS. You may know ABC ticked off Barbara Walters last week by announcing that the Friday edition of 2020, which Barbara Walters has anchored since Kennedy? I don't know. Long time. Since one of the Kennedys. Was going on hiatus next fall. First it's being moved to another night, and then it's just going away in November, sweeps month, so that ABC can try to resuscitate this drama series once and again on Friday night at 10. And then 2020 will return in December. But, you know, this is regarded as a slap at Barbara Walters, and so there have been rumors that she's seriously unhappy. This on top of big budget cutbacks, a lot of layoffs at ABC. So Dan Rather goes on the Fox News Channel. He's traveling around the cable dial promoting his new book. And he said on Fox, quote, I'd love to have her come aboard. She'd be a great asset. Walters has mentioned she has an opt-out clause coming up later this year in her five-year contract. She said on The View that she's already gotten other offers. On the Fox, Paul Azan asked Rather if he would like to see Walters co-anchor the CBS Evening News with him. I'd pay cash money to see it happen any day, any time, Rather said. Of Walters' attitude, she said on The View, so many of us felt that news is a public trust and should be respected as such, and the perception was that ABC doesn't care about news. And because I was in the center of it, I was almost becoming a heroine, she said. So many of us felt that news is a... Barbara Walters, ladies and gentlemen, said that. So, who knows? There may be, at this very moment, conversations going on between Dan and Barbara. It might be a very good day at BlackRock, coming up next here on the show. As I say, it might be a very bad day at BlackRock. A very good day. It was a bad day for a moment there, but it may be a very good day coming up here next on the show. Next, now.
So,
good evening. Welcome to 145 Taste. Chinese beer or American beer?
The Chinese is Tsingtao.
Chinese beer, yes.
All right, sir. Thank you. I'll have one of those.
And?
Do you have any water?
Sure, in kitchen we got plenty of water. You want some?
No, that's fine. I'll just have nothing.
Okay, we need a table soon.
You don't really come here to eat, do you, Dan?
Miss Barbara, if you like dim sum, this is Mecca. This is Rome. This is Constantinople. This is someplace good in China. And as a bonus, it's hard enough to find.
Oh, tell me about it. My driver has a migraine.
That we can talk in relative privacy here. Thank you for inviting me, by the way.
Well, thank you for coming. You know, it's not every day that a Dan Rather has a dim sum dinner with me.
Well.
You know, Dan, we really do have a surprising amount in common.
Mm.
Just for starters, we both loathe Connie Chung.
Listen here, Miss Barbara. You and I have more in common than twin gators in a storm drain, but I don't hate Sister Chung. I just wouldn't, as they say down in West Texas, I wouldn't waste a good heifer on her.
Do they really say that? And what could that possibly mean?
Well, sir.
Here you go, Chinese beer, and for your empty glass.
Thank you.
Well, here's bees in your barn. So, the men with the mouse ears and the long knives have finally come after you.
It's true. Mm. You must know this, Dan. You sit in your little protected enclave for what seems like forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, one fine day, the barbarians have arrived at the front door and...
And you bring yourself up short with this reality check. You'd stopped even locking it.
No, you've locked it, but they come in anyway.
Oh, they just bully their way in like... Fire ants at a funeral, like prairie dogs
at whatever. I think we're getting trapped in my own metaphor. My point was...
No, please. Your point was simply that you don't realize you've lost your umbrella until it starts raining cow poop.
All right, yes, fine. Mm. So I saw your interview on Fox...
Well, now, please, Miss Barbara, look, before you leap to any conclusions, let me just make this cattle auction clear and mark it well. I had to go on Fox. My publisher made me do it, so...
No, Dan, that's fine. I've promoted books everybody in the anchor game has.
Well...
No, I'm not judging you.
No, but, well, you know, it wasn't without some misgivings that I went along with all this. I mean, that's enemy territory every bit as much as downtown Baghdad. You venture in there without some conditions laid down about the parameters of the interview in front. And before a fruit fly can have an amorous thought... You got your head handed to you, smothered in hot sauce. You want to order?
I'm not too terribly hungry. Ever.
All right, let me just order up some dim sum for the table. You can have a little of... Sir, excuse me?
Yes, what's the problem? You don't like a beer?
No, I just wanted to order some food.
Oh, good. You decide we shouldn't have to pay $2,000 a day rent just so you have a place to drink beer? That's good. What would you like?
Two of the number threes.
Three number two.
No, sir. Two number threes.
That's what I say. You order. You let me write down my way.
Yes, sir. One number seven.
One number seven.
And four of the number 12s.
Four number 12.
Wait a minute. How come...
You want food? I gotta put your order in before kitchen takes break.
This is why I never eat south of 65th Street. This and the roaches.
Oh, don't mind him. He's just a victim of Chinese waiter syndrome. So... The way I see it, where we're at, is that you're at the head-scratching phase about if what I said on Fox was my own personal opinion or if in some way I was sending a message to Garcia on behalf of my fearless leader, Comrade Mel.
Then if ABC doesn't want my brand of journalism, obviously I need to find some place that does.
Mm-hmm. Outside of daytime.
Yes, outside of daytime. What?
No, I just...
Dan, daytime is for casual conversation with celebrities. Prime time is when I can do in-depth profiles of celebrities.
I hear the money's not as good in daytime.
It's much better.
Really?
But this isn't about money. It's about journalistic integrity and money.
No, listen here, Miss Barbara. You know, when Brother Mel asked me about all this, mm-hmm. I reminded him that even Ed Murrow used to do celebrity interviews.
Great. And what did he say?
He asked me who Ed Murrow was.
Well, he's a younger man.
Look, Miss Barbara, mm-hmm. nobody's past year's totally green these days. Mm-hmm. We had our layoffs, you're having yours. Mm-hmm. CNN is slicing off everything north of the cojones.
So, maybe I should just stay at ABC and let them pay me for not being on the air. You know, Hugh Downs always said that was the best revenge.
Well, now, all right, let's get tick close to the point here. I've been authorized to say that I've been told that you could not expect us to remount 2020 for you.
Oh, no, of course not. But
we do have a franchise in our house, 60 Minutes, that might spawn another edition that could focus on your brand of journalism. Call it 60-60. Put it on Friday at 10. And watch the mouse sweat.
So, Daniel.
Yes, ma'am.
It sounds like we have something to talk about.
All right, then.
Waiter. Yes, sir. You want to order Kitchen About to Crows?
Yeah, I could swear on a stack of world almanacs that
it's okay, Daniel. I'm not hungry. Hmm. Not for food.
Hey, you want another beer, laughing man?
No, sir. Just the check. Thank you.
Thou swell, thou witty, thou sweet, thou grand, wouldst kiss me pretty, wouldst hold my hand. Both thine eyes are cute too, what they do to me. Hear me holler, I choose a sweet Lollapalooza in thee. We'd be so sweet in a hut for two, two rooms and kitchen, I sure would do. Give me just a plot of not a lot of land. And thou swell, thou witty, thou grand, Lollapalooza in thee. We'd be so sweet in a hut for two, two rooms and kitchen, I'm sure would do. Give me just a plot of not a lot of land, and thou swell, thou witty, thou sweet, thou pretty, thou swell, thou witty, thou grand.
Well, the finger pointing is going on with great gusto right now in Washington as a result of Vermont Senator James Jeffords' decision this week, or announced this week, to leave the Republican Party and become an independent. The White House Chief of Staff, Andrew Card, says President Bush should have known sooner. Quote, I wish I'd served the president better, Card said. At the same time, he and other senior White House advisors sought to deflect blame for Jeffords' departure, putting the onus on Jeffords, some using less than flattering terms. If you want to hear some of those, tune into Rush Limbaugh. The chief of staff said that when Jeffords met with, when he told the president and Dick Cheney that Jeffords might switch, this was Monday night, the president was incredulous, even though a Vermont newspaper had reported last weekend that Jeffords might leave his party. Says Card, the chief of staff of the White House, "I certainly wish we would have known." Gee, I guess they don't get those Vermont newspapers like they used to. "I guess I certainly wish we would have known," says Jeffords. There have been rumblings that Jeffords was unhappy with Bush's agenda and was considering defecting. "No one took them seriously," says White House senior advisor Karen Hughes. Well, apparently Jeffords did. An early sign of trouble should have been the widespread coverage that was given to the exclusion of the senator from a Rose Garden ceremony honoring a Vermont social studies teacher as National Teacher of the Year. The White House maintained no disrespect was intended. Asked if the White House had reached out to Jeffords after the snub stories appeared in at least five major newspapers, a top White House official said, quote, "I'm not aware of those stories." What did appear in the front of at least one newspaper, the New York Times this week, was a photograph of President Bush taking time out from the controversy to have a brief conversation with the Dalai Lama.
Well, sir, Dalai Lama, hmm? This is a most auspicious occasion. Welcome to the People's House.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't see that many of the people here today.
Well, we have cut down on the tourism just a little bit. My predecessor went a little overboard in that direction. So, your stay in Washington has been pleasant, I trust.
Well, every place I go, that's where I am. There's something very pleasant about that.
Well, there you go. Hey, listen, speaking of things that are funny, monkey goes into a bar. No, actually, I probably should not tell you that one. There's a prostitute in it.
Oh, I appreciate your consideration.
Hey, no problemo, senor. You know, don't thank me, thank my briefers. So look, we appreciate all you've done for the cause of freedom in Tibet. You know, you're regular Tibetan Richard Gere.
Well, except for the gerbils. You have heard that rumor, haven't you?
Well, Laura really tracks the rumors more closely than I do. But I do want to say that we took office feeling that our predecessor's China policy was a grotesque failure.
Well, only one country's China policy has been a success in the last half century.
Really?
Yes, China.
Yeah, that's excellent. But am I missing the joke here? Because, I mean...
No. I knew when this struggle began that it would be my life's work.
That's funny. You know, I had that same feeling about running a baseball team, but it just didn't work out. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I made out like a freaking Mexican bandit on the money side. But
believe me, Mr. President, I appreciate the problems of running a large organization. You know, my people can't even keep my frequent flyer miles straight.
Yeah, well, that is a bitch. But anyway, we're delighted you're here.
I just want to stress to you that economic cooperation with the Chinese can go hand in hand with a principled stand on the Tibet issue.
Hey, listen, Mr. Lama, you know, all due respect, but, sir, you know the one thing that will help the cause of a free Tibet more than anything else?
Well,
seriously.
No.
Our tax cut. Listen to me here just a sec. You give the people more of their own money back to spend as they see fit, the more of them are going to donate to your cause.
I see.
And yes, I know what you're thinking. That's the kind of thing my father used to call voodoo economics. But
believe me, sir, I'm not judging you.
No, but these are different times, and it is a different Republican Party.
If I were an official, you know, Olympic diving competition, uh-huh. I wouldn't be judging the divers. You see what I'm saying?
It's just... I mean, look at this Jim Jeffords. I mean, I hope this isn't inside baseball stuff for you.
No. I read the papers. I mean, that's our meditate.
Yeah, well, here's this fellow. My people are telling me there's no way he's quitting the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, he's out of the party quicker than a fraternity president blows out of a cocaine raid, you know? Yeah. I mean, how would you feel if one day you woke up, you know, maybe a little later than usual, but that's not the point, and your people told you that Richard Gere endorsed holding the Olympics in Beijing?
I would feel bad.
Yeah.
Then I would feel good when the bad feeling began to end.
Yeah, well, I just trust in the Lord to help me see my way to the destruction of my enemies.
Well, that's the least he can do for you.
You're exactly right. And to be fair, it's also the most. But what do you read the Bible at all?
I've read many versions of the Bible. You're probably most familiar with the King James.
Yeah. So what would you do in that situation? Would you invite Richard Gere to a Teacher of the Year ceremony on your front lawn?
Well, of course, I don't have a lawn.
Well, now, let me just take this opportunity to reiterate our country's steadfast support of the belief that every Tibetan should have a lawn. Well, but, you know, that's not petty, right? That's just reward your friends and punish your enemies, right?
I suppose that is what it is. But Richard Gere would never abandon this cause.
Yeah, I'm sure he wouldn't.
No. But,
this Jim Jeffords would. So would you hold your staff accountable for not alerting you to this betrayal by Gere? Or would you feel, as Karl Rove, my chief of staff, says, that finger-pointing is for Democrats?
Can I tell you something absolutely bizarre? They've got me doing politically incorrect next week. I mean, Leno, I understand. No, but,
no, it's weird. Absolutely. Well, look, I know I've rattled on about my problems.
Well, perhaps just, you know, when you meet with the president of China, this could be something you might discuss with him.
I'll think about it, but I doubt he's even heard of Senator Jeffords. But I thank you for your time and for your wise counsel.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah. Listen, I still think it sounds weird myself. You take care now.
Nobody's fault but mine.
Nobody's fault but mine. If I die and my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine. Well, it's nobody's fault but mine. Nobody's fault but mine. Nobody's fault but mine. Well, now I got a Bible I can read. I got a Bible I can read. If I fail to read it and my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine. Well, my mother, she taught me how to pray. Mother, she taught me how to pray. If I fail to pray and my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine. Thank you.
a song I can sing.
I got a song I can sing. If I fail to sing it and my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine. Well, it's nobody's fault but mine. Nobody's fault but mine. Well, if I die and my soul be lost, ain't nobody's fault but mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, it looks like the Russians were listening to this broadcast last week. They've stepped up to the plate and are, according to the New York Times, volunteering to have some nuclear waste dumped in their fine country. A listener suggests storing it in canisters and blasting it into space. I just think you're my backyard. You know, have that nuclear waste where you can keep an eye on it. It's so much. You're going to trust the Russians to keep control of the nuclear waste? They got all those bombs. Maybe it makes sense. I don't know. Anyway, no time to figure it out now. That concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan. Around the world through the Armed Forces Network on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz and on your computer whenever you want it. In two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like everybody being co-located if you'd agree to join me with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.